Welcome to On the Bench. This is Brendan Sinone. I got Josh Newberg with me today. And Josh, would you like to introduce our very, very, I don't want to oversell it. No, I'm going to oversell it. Very, 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 very special guest we're going to have on today.
Yeah, this is a legendary podcast. We have former Florida State quarterback Charlie Ward, Heisman Trophy winner, coming on the podcast today. Brendan, you excited?
I'm excited. I'm a little nervous, anxious, happy, giddy. Yeah, it's a big deal. And also a former FSU point guard.
I was going to slip it. I forgot. How could I forget?
Added in there. I mean, Charlie, one of the best dual sport athletes in the history of college athletics. And he's going to kind of give some insight into his recruiting process to Florida State, his time as a football player. Going to talk a little bit about some hoops, too. He's a big fan of Coach Hammond, what the hoops program is doing. And then at the very end of the interview, stick around. There's some technical issues early on, but everyone's internet's kind of bogging down. You get to hear some dogs barking too, but it's fun. Charlie gets to talk about
Coach. Glad you get your apologies out early. Yeah, let's just get to the interview, Brendan.
But hey, guy, before we do that, but stick around for, he talks about Coach Norvell, his interactions with him. Before we get to that, real quick, I do want to let it be known we're like helping out local businesses, reading some ads this week. So it's free. We're not getting anything from it. I just want to help out local businesses in Tallahassee. Chris and myself live in Tallahassee. We're local. We know a lot of local businesses are hurting right now. So if we can help and use our platform in any way, that's what we're going to do. So for today, I want to shout out the Red Shed. It's awesome barbecue, legit like BBQ, being served out of a literal red shed every day from 11 to 7 off of Crump Road in Mahan. That's right past I-10. They basically do like quintessential barbecue. They do it the right way. They offer up ribs, beef brisket, pulled chicken, pulled pork. My wife loves their pulled pork bowl. And they do homemade sides from scratch every day as well. I love the spicy mac and cheese. Everything is boxed and ready to go. They're taking extra steps to stay ahead of sanitation. They sanitize everything constantly, including money and the credit card machine. The folks at the register are using gloves and hand sanitizers. So they're being safe. They serve it outdoors, so you basically can keep your social distance in a safe way. So if you are around, if you are out leaving the house, if you are hungry, I would recommend Red Shed, local business. They do a really good job. So check it out. Again, that's off of Crump Road in Mahan. And with that, we're going to go to our national ads. And then after that, we got Charlie freaking Ward coming up. Let's go.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right, as promised, we have Heisman Trophy winner, national champion, first round NBA draft pick. I'm giving out his credentials right now. It's Charlie Ward. Charlie, I know you're a humble person. Is it okay if I call you an FSU legend? You okay with that?
Sure.
I think it's accurate. So Charlie, thank you for joining Josh, myself on the bench. We've been looking forward to this interview. I guess a place I want to start with you is, what was the first time you met Coach Bowden or heard from him? And what was that moment like for you?
I'm not sure when the first time, but I do remember seeing him at one of our high school football games. And That was the first time I saw him in person. I've always watched since I lived in Thomasville. I watched all of the FSU games, all of the Bobby Bowden shows on Sunday mornings. And so I was accustomed to, understanding and knowing who he was because of, you know, my growing up and watching FSU football. And so when he came to town, you know, it was big time. I guess it's just like today, if, you know, a Nick Saban or someone like that, Dabo Swinney, came to watch you play in person, you'd definitely be excited about it. And, you know, it was a great blessing to be able to, I didn't meet him that day, but it was just good to see him at the game.
Did he definitely come to watch, like, you knew he was there to watch you and watch you perform?
Yes, I was the one that they were recruiting.
Okay.
For my school. So
when you see him there, Charlie, like, is that nerve-wracking at all that he's there to watch you play, or is that exciting? I know you said it's a big deal, but like, how do you interpret that when you see, you know, this coach you've watched for so many years on the sideline watching you play?
No, I mean, it's not nerve-wracking. You know, it was just exciting to see FSU legend there and watching us play, because they were in Thomasville for a game, like we normally would do before a game. And so he stopped over after their meeting, or before their meeting, to come and watch me play. So, you know, at the time, I really didn't understand, you know, the recruiting and all of that. I knew, you know, they were coming to watch, but I didn't fully understand it. But the more and more, and years after, I started to understand a little bit more that, you know, the whole process and how it works. And, you know, they came to watch to see, know, how it performed. And I know Coach Bowden was fully sold on me early on, and possibly even later. He had to be sold by Coach McDuffie that I would be the type of quarterback that could play at Florida State and have great success. And so, you know, I just normally go out and play and do what I normally do, regardless of who's there.
Why do you think Coach Bowden at the time needed to be sold on you as you were as a quarterback? With it, was it your playing style? Was it measurables? Why do you think it took a little bit of pushing in the right direction to get him committed to you?
More so, I think, playing style than anything else, because at that time, you know, they had a certain type of quarterback. And that quarterback was more of a drop back type of guy. Even though Casey Weldon was a little bit different than even Brad, but everyone else before him was more so a drop back, pro style type of quarterback. And I didn't fit that model. And so, you know, it took some prodding and jumping on tables, from what I understand, for it to actually, you know, happen. And I'm grateful that, you know, he gave me an opportunity. And, you know, the thing that really happened was, you know, there were other quarterbacks before me that played the same style, and they chose to move and play a different position because they didn't want to wait. And during that time, if you were coming in as a freshman, more than likely you weren't going to play, especially at the quarterback position, you weren't going to play right away. And Coach asked me if I was willing to be patient, you know, once we started going through the process, If I was willing to be patient, then I would have an opportunity to play quarterback. But the other two guys, Tracy Sanders and Deion Sanders, were quarterbacks, and they weren't willing to wait to play quarterback, which they could have been, you know, great quarterbacks themselves. But they weren't willing to wait, and they chose to move to a different position. They played that position really, really well, which is defensive back. But I chose not to do that. And so that's the reason why I was able to play quarterback there. And probably one of the reasons why I was able to attend Florida State, because I was willing to be patient.
Charlie, it's Newberg. Interesting question coming off of that. Why did you trust Coach Bowden? Because like you said, you had to wait. I mean, there was no guarantees that when you waited, they weren't going to switch your position. So why did you trust Coach Bowden with that?
Well, of course, he's a godly man, Christian man, one. And two, I wanted to play basketball as well. And so with Brad Johnson being a guy who played basketball and football and also the same position, I knew that he would at least give an opportunity to do it. So he had history on his side when it came to that. Other coaches decided not to. And he told me when I was coming in, I would have a chance to play quarterback. So if anyone's going to hold his feet to the fire, it was going to be my mom. And she did. You know, she actually called him or talked with him after my freshman year.
Just to check in?
Just to make sure that, you know, the quarterback position was still a viable spot for me to play in the near future or the future, because I was a punter, as you know, my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
So she just wanted to make sure that, you know, his words that he spoke to us in our living room, you know, were going to come true. And so he's a man of his word, as we all know him today to be. Of all the people that I've heard, you know, he's been a man of his word. And so I can do that. So I've never had any fear that he was going to switch my position or they were going to ask me to play another position. Just because I've had my freshman year, you know, I had some great success. I didn't play. I was a punter, but I didn't get an opportunity to play quarterback on the big stage. But doing scout team and scrimmages and those types of things, they started to realize and understand that I had the ability to play the quarterback position. And so I think that was another reason why I was able to play quarterback after everyone else, you know, got there.
Well, it's kind of crazy to think back then about the process for you to become a quarterback compared to now. Nowadays, the spread offense is everywhere. The fullback is hard to find. You can't even find an offense that uses a fullback anymore. And freshman quarterbacks are being asked to come in and play at the highest level now. So what's that like to see this evolution in under 30 years?
I think it really starts in high school. You know, now they're able to get some training. They're playing a lot of 7-on-7 tournaments, you know, throughout their high school years, which gives a lot of experience. And now they have these Elite 11s and all these different quarterback, you know, camps that they can attend, which gives them a lot more experience. And so you have quite a few guys that are able to come in and play as freshmen and even as sophomores. And so that's just the evolution of our times, because we didn't have all of those things when I was coming up. They had camps and those types of things, but not all the, like you all, 24/7. And
yeah, that's crazy now. Do you enjoy it? Do you enjoy watching it? Like the evolution of the position?
Yes. I mean, even there, you know, the guys are, everyone's bigger and stronger and faster, even at that position. I know when I was coming up, if you were that type of guy, they normally moved you from that position just because that was just the times. And so now when you have a guy who's 6'4 and can run a 4'5, 4'6, 40, and can move a little bit, you know, he's a prototype quarterback, Division I, a high draft pick type guy. And, you know, even during my time, when they were 6'4, 240, they were normally running, you know, 4'8, 4'9, and that's what everybody wanted. And so if you were anything shorter, and even the guys who are shorter today are having more of a legit opportunity to play quarterback at the highest level, even at, you know, 5'10, 5'11. And so, you know, that's just the evolution of the game as well, because when I was coming out, they weren't getting drafted first round. I mean, first overall pick. That just what happened in regards to what kind of skill level you had. That was just the reality of it. And I'm glad that these guys are getting opportunities who are smaller in stature, and they have a certain skill set, and it's being used in the NFL now.
What kind of, with that in mind, Charlie, like, what kind of numbers do you think you'd be able to put up now in modern offenses with the way tempo is, the RPO game, how spread out things are? How dynamic do you think you would, I mean, you already were dynamic, but would your numbers be even crazier the way offenses are kind of catered towards quarterbacks and some of the rules that protect QBs nowadays?
Well, we really, like, I only played 2 years, so, I mean, you know, I was able to accumulate like over 6,000 yards in 2 years. And so, you know, it's just, if I was playing 3 years, then I may have 9,000 to 10,000 yards, you know, as a career. But I only got an opportunity to play 2 years, which was fine. That was just the way it was. But we were in this type of offense early on. Our RPOs were more a traditional NFL style where we called two plays in the huddle, especially my junior year. We would call two plays in the huddle, get to the line of scrimmage, and then change the play, however that looked. But in today's game, you call two plays and you're reading guys. You're reading you have a key that you read and you either give it or throw it depending upon, you know, that guy. So we didn't have those type of options when it came to live ball options. Our options were more pre-snap reads on whether we were going to run the ball or pass the ball. And I didn't do very much running. Just protection, I guess, one. And I was selective when I ran the football as well. But the more I go back and look at some of the film, we did run some QB draw and, you know, some of those types of things, QB traps on occasions. But it wasn't, you know, a heavy dose like you would see a Tim Tebow and some of the guys, you know, when they were running, even Trevor Lawrence, you know, today, Deshaun Watson, those guys, they're heavy runners, meaning they put the ball in their hands to run quarterback counters and those types of things on, you know, regularly. So I didn't have that, which I'm grateful for, but I think, you know, that the offense has evolved as well from the time that we ran the no huddle.
All right. And this is a question that I think our listeners are going to be interested in hearing the answer to. You had a lot of great moments during your time at Florida State. So it's going to be tough, I'm sure, to boil it down to one, but your favorite game that you played in, what's your favorite game that you've ever participated in at FSU? Most memorable.
One?
Yeah, got one most memorable if you can boil it down to one.
That's tough.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm going to go with the championship game.
That's a good one.
Because there was a game that I think a lot of people expected us to win and win big because they really, I don't know if it was because they didn't respect Nebraska. And we're talking about outside people, not us as players and coaches. We knew what we were going up against. But it was something that we had prepared for in some form or fashion. And it just came down to, you know, just a good old-fashioned defensive struggle because we both ran certain offenses that, you know, if you took away certain things or challenged certain things, you could really neutralize a lot of that offense. So for us, they took away a lot of our easy routes. They jammed our receivers. Which threw off our timing, and they did a lot of stunts up front to try to confuse our offensive line. And, you know, they did a lot of blitzing. They did some cheap shots as well, hitting late and those types of things on the quarterback. They did get penalized for it. And, you know, we were fortunate to be able to have a very solid defense as well. And they ran, you know, that option. And so we were able to contain them to keep the game close. But when it was all said and done, you know, we were able to drive late, put a drive together, even though we drove the football down the field a few times, weren't able to score, kick field goals. But, you know, it was just one of those type of games that you like to be in. It's a competitive game. Close game, and as a competitor, you always want to have an opportunity to win the game. And so we had the ball. Well, we didn't have it last, but we put ourselves in a position to score at the end of the game, and we had prepared all year for that moment. You know, people, the Notre Dame game, even though we lost it, we had opportunities in that game to drive the football down the field and score, and we did. But we just weren't able to score in the last opportunity we had. But it helped us with the championship game because we learned from that opportunity. And so, you know, it was a great game. I'm glad Scott Bentley kicked the field goal. It was close. And we had lost games before. You know, wide left during that era. But I was grateful that he was able to make it. And our defense had to come up with a stop. And, you know, they did a good job of keeping them from getting closer to be able to kick a game-winning field goal in the end.
Charlie, you mentioned that you sometimes go back and watch your film. How often do you go back and watch film from those days? And what are you looking for specifically? Is it just to reminisce, or are you going back to kind of look at some of the schemes that you guys ran?
Well, I watched them more when I was coaching football to look at schemes and those types of things, trying to get ideas. But of course, it's like anyone else. You know, I was sitting there watching our guys play, and preparing for moments like today. Meaning, you know, if people ask me about games, I can at least share some of the things that I saw and experienced, as opposed to trying to remember, because I lost. When I got out of football into the NBA, I couldn't remember a whole lot, you know, about my career and some of the games. And so when I was able to obtain some of the video, it brought back a lot of memories as far as the fine points of, you know, the play that people may be asking about. And so it just gave me more in-depth knowledge and brought back memories of, yes, I remember that play when people mm-hmm. asked. And so that's really, you know, and now if I watch it, it's just to go back and reminisce, if anything else.
That's good. I know you said you were coaching, and nowadays you're not coaching, but you are kind of leading a campaign here at the high school level to implement a shot clock in high school basketball.
Yes, I am. I'm actually coaching. You know, I'm still coaching.
Okay, you are coaching.
I'm coaching at Florida High, FSUS, boys basketball, and so. For the past 2 years, we've had great success. I don't know if it's been coaching, but it's definitely been having good players, good support. And so we've had some success the past 2 years. And one of the things that, you know, I've noticed in our high school game is, you know, you have teams, which is fair because everyone used the rules to their advantage. And do what they need to do to win games or whatever the case may be. But I just noticed when I'm watching college basketball, watching the pro game, how much faster guys have to play, just the nuances of the game and different things. And that's something I'm working to implement or have implemented into my program at Florida High, just the concepts. Defensive mindset that the colleges and the pros are looking for. And one of the things, you know, going back to even 1986, when I was in high school, we were all excited about this new thing that they were getting ready to do. And that was the three-point line.
Right.
Up until that time, I mean, we were shooting twos, regardless of how far out it was.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, basketball. But when they started putting the three-point line in the high school game, it changed everyone's perspective and thought process, and everyone's excited about shooting the three. Now, everyone wasn't able to do it at the time because it was something new, and they had to learn. And over the course of our years, 30-plus years or however long it's been, you know, now they're starting to move it back and, you know, move it even further, you know, mm-hmm. in the college ranks and even in the pros. And so I go back to that time because we're in a point where now in high school, especially in Florida, we haven't evolved past the three-point line.
True.
We've done some things to try to change up the game. But we really haven't evolved to see how we can help our kids get prepared and ready for college. And so I'm on this, I'm on the bandwagon of we need to speed up the game. And the shot clock is something that's missing, I do believe, in our high school game. There are some states that are doing it. And I think more and more states are going to start to evolve. As we talk about evolution in a lot of different ways, we got to start to evolve in high school basketball and having a shot clock. It provides a lot of opportunities for kids to develop as they prepare to go to college. It provides more excitement for people who come to the game, especially early on. It'll be something new, mm-hmm. like a three-point line. And so I'm working with a lot of different people in different states to try to see how we can bring a shot clock to high school varsity basketball right now here in Florida. And so I'll be sharing this. I'll be on my soapbox here for quite some time until we can get it done. It may be 2 years, 3 years from now.
Right.
But we got to start somewhere. But the key is just, you know, getting our kids prepared for the next level. And people say, well, my our kids may not go to college. Well, this is a great opportunity for them to have a college experience if they don't choose to go to college by playing with the shot clock, because there may be kids who don't go to college, but at least they'll have what they have in college, which is a three-point line and a shot clock. And those are the things that we really watch. We're watching college basketball, the pro game. You know, everyone's playing at a different pace, and the reason they're playing at a different pace because they have a shorter time to get the ball up and down the court and put the ball in the basket. And it just makes it more interesting.
Charlie, speaking of college basketball, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Coach Leonard Hamilton, what he's done at Florida State. Just how impressive is the culture that he's established, especially the winning the last few years? How impressed are you with what he's done?
Very impressed with Coach Ham, of course. Actually talked to him last night about this shot clock deal, and he gave him some words of wisdom. And
what did he think of the shot clock deal? Well, is he for it?
Yeah, he's for it. And he's willing to help get other coaches, college coaches on board to try to get it pushed over as well. So, you know, I think as I said, it's just an evolution for everyone, try to get this deal done. And finances, we're working to try to make sure that, you know, that's been the main reason why people haven't, you know, pushed it forward. Is they're saying it's a financial issue. Well, we're working to try to find ways to eliminate finances. But Coach Ham, of course, he's been there quite some time. He's been able to establish himself. He's been great all the places he's been. And I'm still trying to figure out how the man is 70 plus years old, however old he is. But and people respect him. He has a system that he's built, and kids buy into that system, which is phenomenal for him to be able to get 5-star, 4-star kids to come and buy into the system that he's that he's used over the years. Of course, he's developed the system, but he's also developed a lot of great talent. You know, guys who left the first year, guys who left the second year, guys who've been there for 4 years. And so he's had a wide range of guys that he's brought in, and now he's, you know, they're all pretty similar. You know, they're long, athletic, basketball IQ. So, you know, and he graduates his kids for the most part. And they're very, very seldom, you know, in trouble. And so those are things that you want from a head coach. And Coach Ham, of course, has a great staff around him. It does help. And I've said this, you know, even with Coach Bowden, when Coach Bowden was strong, when those years we were winning, he had stability in his staff. Mm. When that staff started to break up and he started bringing in different people, then, you know, that's when we started losing more games and those types of things. And so Coach Ham's been very fortunate to be able to have a certain group. Coach Jones has been there forever. CY, you know, has been there for almost 10 years or so. And, you know, Steve Smith is new, but, you know, Gates was there for quite some time before he left to go take the job, I think, at Cleveland State. And so, you know, it's always helpful to be able to have, you know, stability in your staff, in order for you to be able to teach the things that you want to teach. And from year in and year out, they've had the success that they've had because of the stability in the staff.
Charlie, we really appreciate your time joining us here on the bench. Before I let you go, though, I wanted to ask you a question. Have you had a chance to meet Coach Mike Norvell and interact with him and his staff at all?
Yes, I've met Coach Norvell. Actually, the first day he was introduced or in town or whenever, mm-hmm. you know, whenever he signed or whatever the deal was, he came over to the school And I actually happened to be walking out and he was walking in. And so it was interesting, you know, to be able to talk with him because you heard some things about him and he has a, you know, he's just great energy. And then I've had a chance to talk with him again here. I've had a chance to talk with him again here recently, you know, right before this whole virus pandemic hit. And just to hear what he's doing. Of course, I have a son on the team, so I have some inside knowledge of what's going on. And so just to see, you know, what he's been able to do these last 3 months or whatever it has been with the recruiting, with getting a great staff together, mainly as again, I go back to the stability. The good majority of his staff, he's had relationships with before. You know, either at Memphis or Arizona State or somewhere he's had relationships built. And so they're all one group. I'm thinking maybe one or two that may be outside, but they came highly recommended from people that he trusts. And so when you have that kind of continuity within a staff, it takes years off of trying to figure out, you know, one, you know, how this person works and how that person works. When they all have an understanding, it definitely cuts out a lot of the time lag that you need for success to happen. And so I don't know if they'll be successful next year, which I do believe they will, just because of the things that they put in place to be successful with the discipline, with the team unity, and all those things that add up, you know, over the course of time. Of course, not being able to have a spring definitely hurts.
Hurts
the continuity. But I do know that when they do reconvene, they're learning as much as they can now virtually. But when they do reconvene, it'll be fast forward, and they'll be behind, just like a lot of other first year coaches. Will be behind in teaching their techniques and all those types of things. But I do believe that they'll have great success because, one, they'll be disciplined on and off the field, which he's doing a great job of, and they're going to play with great effort. So, as I tell my boys that I coach, that, you know, effort covers over a lot of things. And, you know, if you don't do anything else, you make mistakes, you still got to play with great effort. And that's something I do know that they'll play with. And with the talent we have, the guys play with great effort, we'll win games. Right. And with discipline. We'll win games because we have enough talent to be able to do that. So I'm looking forward to it, the season, and just seeing how we can rebound from, you know, our previous years equipment and not meeting the goals that we had set for ourselves as a program. And I don't know how many games we'll win, but I just know that the product that we'll put out on the field will be one that we'll be proud of for sure.
Yeah, and Charlie, it's been great to see you around the program more in these last couple years, and we thank you for taking time to join us on the bench today.
Yeah, thanks, well, Charlie.
I appreciate you guys having me.
All right, Charlie, talk to you soon.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Charlie Ward, everybody, that was really cool.
That was awesome. I get a little starstruck with some of the guys from the 90s.
Yeah.
Charlie and Coach Bowden. The first time I ever called Coach Bowden for an interview, Josh, he called me boy, and I was like shaking. He's like, "Hey, boy."
I remember I used to have to go over to the field and stick my mic in the scrum for when I was working on the territory with Jim Henry and Dave Peters. And
oh my God,
I was 19 years old. I would never ask a question, but I would just make sure my arm was in there getting that audio. It was great to hear. Coach Bowden would speak for like 45 minutes after every practice. It was great.
Those were the days. It was interesting to hear Charlie, his thoughts kind of like on football changing and sports changing, and
yeah,
someone who seems very open to like adapting in a lot of ways. It was, that was a cool interview. That was fun. And I wasn't sure what to expect. It was a good time.
Also, what stuck out to me, man, is just how passionate he is about basketball.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, you can tell he loves football. He enjoyed every minute of his time at Florida State playing football, but you can just really tell that he loves coaching basketball. He loves the game of basketball.
We didn't get into some of the NBA stuff. We could have probably done like a full another 20 minutes on his basketball career at FSU, and then in the NBA. We could have gotten into the Knicks Heat rivalry. There could have been all sorts of other stuff. So maybe later on, if we're quarantined like in 2 months from now, we'll do this again.
Charlie might be asking in a month, hey, you guys still doing that pod? Can I come back on and talk?
No, that was fun. Yeah, it was a good time. So I don't want to jinx this, Josh. I think we have some other cool stuff set up this week. I'll leave it at that. All right. I'll leave it at that. I won't get into it, but I've been working the phones. Things have been happening even during that interview. I'm not even going to tell you what's about to happen. It's so cool. So ending the podcast now. We'll hopefully be back tomorrow. For Josh Newberg, I'm Brendan Sinone. This is On the Bench. And thanks to Charlie for coming on this podcast.